Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Meet the Candidates. I'm your host, Jonathan Grabowski. We are in the middle of general election season, and joining me today is the Republican candidate for U.S. Congress for the district, Peter Tedeschi. Peter, thank you for joining us.
Hey, Jonathan, great to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Absolutely. So we're going to go through a large list of issues and topics, but I want to start off with, who is Peter Tedeschi?
First of all, it's great to be here. I am a lifelong resident of the South Shore, as is my wife, Kathy. I've lived here my entire life. We've raised a family. I've got three children, my daughter Christina, son-in-law Matt, I have a granddaughter Quinn, and I have another grandchild on the way right before the elections,
wow.
And two sons, Pearson and Christian. And so lifelong residents, my family has deep roots here, and absolutely love being here on the South Shore, appreciate everything about it. And I'm a resident of Marshfield. I grew up in Norwell,
okay.
But I live in Marshfield right now with my wife and family.
Okay. You've been really involved in the community. Hmm. Just talk about your community involvement for a little bit.
Sure. Well, you know, it's I spent many years working in Boston, actually. Mm-hmm. Most recently as a senior vice president of Putnam Investments. In 2008, my family asked me to come to run Tedeschi Food Shops. It was at that point, we have stores obviously throughout the district, mm-hmm. throughout the area, and it really gave me a lot of insight in terms of what was going on the South Shore. And there was a couple of organizations that we got very involved in very quickly. One of them is one called Friendship Home. Mm-hmm. You may be familiar with it.
Yep.
They're located in Norwell. Great organization. They do wonderful work supporting the developmentally disabled. And while I was CEO at Tedeschi's, we were actually their number one employer of Friendship Home members. So that was a great thing. And it's one of those organizations where there's a real need and you cannot help but to feel good supporting something like Friendship Home. And it's one of those type of things where I always say, we do these things because they're the right thing to do. But I often say to people, I really felt in many ways, us as a company, we were the biggest beneficiaries. Mm-hmm. It just feels so good. Best Buddies is another organization. In fact, we were their employer of the year in 2013.
Uh-huh.
But those are just a couple that I feel very strongly about, my wife as well. And we do whatever we can.
Okay, so let's talk about why you're here today. So why are you running and why this congressional seat?
Couple of things. First of all, running because this is an area that I care deeply about. For me, this is personal.
Okay.
Growing up in the area, it's an area that I've called home. It's an area that's been great to me and my family and really allowed us, starting with Italian immigrant grandparents that came over here at the turn of last century, to realize the American dream. This is an opportunity to give back to that area that I love so much. So for me, it's very personal. Then the other part of it is, quite frankly, like probably many of your viewers, I'm very concerned with what I see going on in Capitol Hill today.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have two choices, complain about it or do something about it. So I've chosen to do something about it, and this is the best way I know how to give back to an area and to try to fix something that's broken.
Okay. I want to do some civics 101 here. So
sure.
What is the role of a member of the House of Representatives?
You know, there's the way that a lot of our elected officials and reps are behaving today, and the way it should be. The way it should be is they should be representing the needs and concerns of the folks in the district that they represent. Unfortunately, that's not always the case today.
Okay. One of the big things now that people talk about and a lot of time in the media is the political spectrum. You know, this person's far left, this person's moderate, this person's a
sure.
rhino. Where do you sit on the political spectrum?
You know, I get asked that question a lot. I am fiscally very conservative, mm-hmm. And I'm socially, I'm moderate. So I always like to say, you know, I feel like I represent the 80% of us that are stuck in the middle between these sort of two extremes that mm-hmm. seem to be interested in tearing the fabric of our country apart. So, but I'm fiscally very conservative. I'm socially moderate.
See if you can fill in the blank for me here.
Sure.
And if you can with a political figure, either in office or maybe recently in office, if you like blank, you'll like Peter Tedeschi.
I would have to say our governor, Charlie Baker. Charlie is, I think he's done a great job for the Commonwealth. He's a great person who I've gotten to know, especially in my involvement mm-hmm. here now in politics. And, you know, one of the things our governor says all the time, and it's something that I really agree with, he has a saying, he said, you know, be tough on the issues, soft on the people.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it's supposed to be, and he lives that out every day.
How would your business background be beneficial to, you know, serving this position?
Well, as someone that is fiscally conservative, I think that there's certainly the argument to be made, and we see it routinely, that our government could be doing a much better job in terms of how they put our tax dollars to use, making sure that there's full transparency, and that we're measuring success on the programs that we put forward and that we ask our taxpayers to fund. That's number one. So, you know, there are a lot of problems that need to be solved. And as a business person, I always prided myself as being a problem solver. And I realized that to do that, you can't do it in a vacuum. You can't do it with just the same group of folks all the time. You need to be willing to work in a bipartisan way. Mm-hmm. Best example that I could probably give you is while I was a CEO at Tedeschi Food Shops, I would routinely work with some of my larger competitors, Cumberland Farms of the world, Verk Enterprises. We would put our competitive differences aside, and trust me, I tell you, we were very, very, we were competitors. But we do it for the common good of the entire industry. Wouldn't it be refreshing to have that type of leadership in D.C. representing the people of the 9th Congressional District?
Are there particular skills or traits you think that are, you know, definitely applicable to the position?
Listening is one of the ones that's very important. We have been doing what we call People's First Tour. And essentially what we've done is we've gone and we've visited every one of the 46 towns in the district, Jonathan, mm-hmm. some of them many times. And we meet with first responders, small and large businesses, and everyday people. Mm-hmm. And every time we do that, we learn something new. Being an elected official, one of the important things is being self-aware enough to know that you don't know everything. We learn something new every time we go out. So that's number one, listen. And then be willing to work across party lines, because that's the only way we're going to get things done. We have a 16% approval rating in Congress, and that's part of the reason. I want to try to help fix that. And I'm willing to work with whoever I need to work with to do the work of the folks in this district.
I want to get into some of the issues, but first, is there one issue to you that's most important?
Again, I think it's you may not term it as an issue. To me, it's a problem that needs to be solved, and that is a lack of bipartisan collaboration taking place on Capitol Hill today. The gentleman that I'm running against, he votes with his own party 95% of the time. I'd like to joke, I'm lucky if I agree with myself 95% of the time. He ranks 364th on the partisan index rating. That's the bottom 16%. Wow. And he's ranked as the most partisan member of the Massachusetts delegation. That's part of the problem. I really feel that I'm a solution.
Okay. You've talked about championing truly representative democracy. Mm-hmm. Why is Congress broken, and what part would you play in fixing it?
So again, I think probably the biggest issue we have in Congress today, we're not able to get a lot of things done. And I think it's because everybody's sort of gone to their corners. And we seem to have forgotten the days when we had Tip O'Neill mm-hmm. and Ronald Reagan, diametrically opposed mm-hmm. relative to their political philosophies, but willing to put those differences aside at the end of the day to do the work of the American people. We need elected officials that are willing to do the very same thing. You know, I often say retail and politics are a lot alike. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, it's all about people, understanding and addressing their needs, wants, and concerns. I want to be able to do that for the people of this district.
Okay. You've talked about making sure we have a highly educated and competitive workforce. How do we make higher ed more affordable?
Great question. I think so. There's a lot of discussions about student loan issues and things mm-hmm. like that. We need to, first of all, make universities accountable and hold them to task. I struggle to understand why the cost of higher education is as high as it is today. So I think we need to hold them accountable. I think we need to do everything we can to lower the cost of higher education. But I think the other thing we need to do is make sure there are avenues for people to have ready access or available access to things like vocational training. Because technology and things like that certainly can replace, you have autonomous vehicles. Maybe eventually they're gonna replace some truck drivers and things like that. I know it sounds far-fetched, it's coming. Mm-hmm. But the fact remains that it's gonna be a long time before our carpenters, plumbers, and electricians can be replaced with technology. Mm-hmm. One of the things we hear from a lot of businesses, Jonathan, is they have a difficult time hiring people with the adequate skill sets to address those type of needs, mm-hmm. those trades, if you will. I think we need to make vocational education at higher levels more readily available, and probably spread the word that it's out there for people. And there are a lot of people that would avail themselves of it that just don't do that today. So I think there are more options for people than we see in front of us today.
It's funny because my follow-up question to you was, do we need to push the trade route more?
Oh, so absolutely, absolutely. I mean, we hear it all the time, and there's certain areas where it's more acute, mm-hmm. But it's a real problem. But like I say, anytime you have a problem, you have an opportunity. Here's an opportunity for us to do something about it.
We live in an innovative state, Massachusetts, but there's red tape. Mm. What's some of the red tape that stifles innovation? How are you going to combat it?
So I think when you're looking at addressing issues like red tape, one of the things you need to consider is you don't always have to reinvent the wheel. Mm-hmm. See what someone else has done, whether it comes to faster and more affordable development, whether it be for a facility, a lab, a warehouse. Certainly there are better ways we can do it than we're doing it today. It takes too long. It can be very onerous. And if you look at places like New York, where recently in the last few years, they made a concerted effort to shrink the time it took to get approvals for development. They didn't cut any corners, but they were able to shrink it for something like 3 years to less than a year to get shovel in, things going. That's how you do it. The other thing you can do is make sure that our infrastructure is where it needs to be, roads, bridges, highways, things mm-hmm. like that. So those are just a few.
Okay, we'll talk about infrastructure in a few minutes.
Sure.
You and I are both involved with the Solskjaer Chamber of Commerce. Yeah. We were discussing that before the show. One of the things that Solskjaer did was their 2030 plan. Yeah. One of the things that they talked about was that the South Shore is an aging area. We need to attract younger people and more business to the district. How do we do that?
Couple of things. You need to do everything you can to attract businesses to the area, and I think that Peter Foreman and the folks of the South Shore Chamber do a great job of doing that, of going out and sort of proactively selling the South Shore to companies, high tech and other companies with sort of that have longer runways into the future and that represent future business opportunities. That's one way you attract them down here. Certainly with having good education. We've got very good education generally. You look at it down the South Shore already. But also adequate infrastructure. I hate to get back to that. But making sure that you've got the right roads, bridges, even things like signals and things like that mm-hmm. are very important to families. And of course, that we're an area where we really understand that the number one responsibility of our elected officials is to keep us safe, to keep our community safe, to support our men and women who keep us safe every day, our first responders, making sure we're adequately supporting them so that people can feel that their families are safe in the areas where they're gonna live.
All right. What's an opportunity or two to make the district economically stronger? Do you see any out there? Is there one or two you can think of?
Sure, there's a few. There's sort of the old, which has been around for a long time, certainly like our fishing industry. Current congressman's not doing enough to support our fishing industry. They need and deserve a lot of our help, and they're not getting it today. And then there's attracting more high-tech and technical jobs down here. But to do that, again, you need to have the infrastructure so that people can justify being able to get people, trucks, and transportation to and from the facilities if they're going to be developing and selling products. I think those are the type of things that represent some of the greatest opportunities in our area. So we are blessed to live in an area where you have older industries that are thriving and very important, some of them multi-generational, mm-hmm. But then there are newer opportunities where we can attract, again, high-tech type jobs too.
You've mentioned the word infrastructure a few times
yeah.
so far. What's some infrastructure projects you'd like to get funding for if elected?
There's a few. When you think about it, of the 46 towns that we have in this district, 80% of them are coastal. That comes with some unique opportunities and challenges. We are blessed to live in an area that has so much beautiful coastline. But the fact of the matter is, we have a lot of our seawalls and infrastructures that are crumbling and failing. Mm-hmm. We need to get ahead of that and not wait till we make national news or have a catastrophic failure of some sort. So I would say coastal resiliency is mm-hmm. one, and that is going to be very important. And then things like our Cape Cod bridges. Another one's a perfect mm-hmm. example. They serve millions of cars every single year, mm-hmm. and they're failing. And this hasn't been something that's just happened overnight. This has been going on for a while. But like anything else, if you're not maintaining things properly, you're going to have larger problems down the road. Sort of like if you neglected your car, didn't change the oil long enough, you're going to have these problems. And then beyond that, we need to anticipate that they will come to end of life at some point. It may not be in the next 5 years, it might be. But we need to anticipate that and start planning for that. None of that has been happening. So we need to make sure that we're ahead of it and not sitting and waiting for something to happen before we react. In business, you always try to respond to situations. A lot of our elected officials seem to react to issues instead, and that's by that time it's too late, mm-hmm. and there's been an adverse effect that could have been otherwise avoided.
Great. Congressional spending. Does Congress spend too much?
I'm not even sure that it's that they spend too much. It's that they're not as judicious in their spending as they need to be. So, I mean, you could take this two ways and say, yeah, they do spend too much. Certainly they could be doing a much better job in terms of how they spend taxpayers' money. And again, if you're going to propose legislation that's going to require funding, tell us what constitutes success. Why are you doing it? Why are we investing this money or spending this money? And there ought to be full transparency so that people could see that we are achieving the objectives that were set out when I told you you were going to have to pay these taxes, or they were going to take existing tax monies and put them towards this project. What's the benefit? And there just doesn't, there isn't that type of transparency. There isn't that conversation. Too many things seem to happen unilaterally, and that's just not good for anybody.
What can be done to kind of, I guess you'd say, rein in this spending that goes on?
I think it comes down to transparency and making sure that we're holding them accountable so that when someone says, we need $50 million for this, we ask the question, why do you need the money? What's the benefit to the taxpayers? And by the way, one of the questions that isn't asked often enough is this a one-time expenditure? Or by spending this $50 million, are we going to have to spend another $5 million in another 5 years? We may decide to do it, but we at least have the right to know so we can plan for our fiscal future as well, because what we're doing to future generations right now is just absolutely unacceptable. It's not fair. It's not right. We need to be much more aware, and we need to make some changes.
Coastal infrastructure is one of those things that comes up no matter if I'm talking to someone running for Congress like yourself or someone running for state representative. Mm. Another one of those issues is healthcare. Mm. What's your thoughts on ACA?
So, look, I'm against single payer, but I like having the latitude to be able to include things like pre-existing conditions and things like that. We need to be fair and equitable about this. But I also believe that with healthcare, again, I think there's a perfect opportunity there where if we had more transparency, I believe a couple things. One, we'd get better results in terms of better patient care, and B, we would lower costs. You know how much it costs to get your oil changed in one location versus another, and that may influence where you decide to get your oil changed. Yeah. Why shouldn't you know the same exact thing for the hospital you're going to for a hip replacement, a heart operation, or something minor? Wouldn't it be nice to know what it costs at one hospital versus another? And by the way, what the success rate is at those same hospitals. I think if you start to push that type of transparency, I really do believe you'll start to see costs come down, and it will result, I believe, in better care as well.
Hmm. Another one of those issues that affects every race is the opioid crisis. Has Congress acted properly in facing this crisis?
I don't believe they have. I believe there's been a lot of lip service, and I don't believe that Congress has done enough. I don't think there's anybody. I know I've know personal family members that have struggled with opioids, and we need to do a lot more. And I think it starts with making sure we have, first of all, enough beds, not only for opioids, but for other addictions, whether it be alcohol or others, to make sure that there's adequate beds in place, because we're sending folks in for treatment for a week and 10 days, and then expecting them to come out and that's not gonna happen. Mm-hmm. It's been proven that they need to spend longer time. Unfortunately, it's pay me now or pay me later. We need to have them in for longer time, and then we need to have better follow-up after the fact. That all costs money, but A, it's the right thing to do, morally. Two, if you wanna be selfish about it, what's it costing our economy? with the loss of people who are unable to work, and what does it mean to the families who unfortunately lose loved ones? Mm-hmm. It's just too high a price that we're paying as a society right now. We need to be able to spend. We need to spend the money and invest it to make sure that we're getting the adequate help we need to get the best possible results for people that are struggling with this illness.
Veteran services is something that comes up a lot as well. Does DC do enough for the veterans?
I don't think they do, and I feel bad. My brother was a Vietnam vet. I have uncles that served in the Second World War. One of my uncles was a Navy pilot in Vietnam as well. And, you know, a lot of vets come back, and I think we do a decent job dealing with vets' issues where we can actually see the issue. Prosthetics and things like that have come a long way, and that's encouraging. That's great. But the fact of the matter is that we have way too many that are struggling with things we don't see, psychological issues that are going unaddressed. We need to do a lot more to make sure we have better outreach for our vets to make sure they're getting the psychological support that they need so they can live full and productive lives. And I think that the Congress can certainly do more to make sure we're protecting the people that are the ones that actually fought, in many cases died, to give us the right to vote.
Mm-hmm. Another topic that comes up is immigration. Do we need reform? I mean, that's been the battle, you know, currently.
We absolutely do need reform. When it comes to immigration and illegal immigration in this country, we've kicked this can down the road for a long time, and we're seeing the results of it. First, we need to secure our southern border. That's where it starts. But the next thing we really need to do is to figure out what we're going to do with the folks that are here illegally. The fact is, we've sort of allowed it to happen by not addressing this issue sooner. We need to address it now. So what I would propose is for the folks that are, we call potential DACA recipients, I'm willing to give them a path to citizenship. All I ask is that they respect our laws and pay their own way. For the folks that are adults, maybe that brought them here illegally, I'm willing to give them a pathway to become permanent residents, not legal citizens, so they'll never have the right to vote. But again, as long as they're able to pay their own way and respect our laws. I think that's fair and equitable. And then we also need to be mindful when we're implementing changes to immigration, that we're not doing things that have consequences for businesses, for example, down the Cape, where tourism is a $1 billion-a-year industry, people that need H-2B visas. Some of them have been caught up in the last few years. They've been coming to the Cape for 5, 6, 7, 8 years from places like Jamaica. And all of a sudden, in the last couple of years, because of some of our immigration changes, they've been held up. That's put a real hurt on a lot of businesses. So we just need to be mindful about that. What is it we're trying to get done, and try no ill consequences from our actions.
You've been going around the district. What are the things that you're hearing from constituents?
It's interesting. Things like opioids is sort of ubiquitous. You hear it everywhere. You hear sad, tragic stories from people about that. And that's one that I think most folks can relate to. They know of someone. So that's one. And then, you know, depending on where you are, I mean, we hear about things like the fishing industry. When you're down the Cape, you hear about things like the bridges. But all over the place, we hear about concerns with coastal resiliency. Again, being in an area where 46 towns, 80% of them coastal, that is an issue and should continue to be an issue. But that's sort of the non-political. From a political perspective, what we hear from people is they're ready for a change. And people are just very disheartened with what they see going on in Capitol Hill today. And we really feel, based on what we're hearing, they're ready for a change. And I feel that I'm the person that represents the type of change they're looking for.
If someone wants to find out more about you, where can they go?
They should go to TedeschiForCongress.com. There's links to our Facebook, Twitter, and everything. They can read all of my positions, what we're doing, what we've got going on, and what's coming up.
A lot of times we like to end the show with some fun questions, because most of the show we talk about these, you know, very big, complicated, difficult issues. So we always try to know some fun.
Okay.
So what's something interesting about you that people may not know?
People always seem to be fascinated and shocked, I don't know why, when they hear that I ride motorcycles. I love to ride motorcycles, and my wife and I both ride with my sons, and we love it.
What do you ride?
I've got a Harley Heritage Softail, and I've got an Ultra Classic. So sometimes my wife will hop on the back of one of mine, and my son will get in the other, and sometimes she rides one, and I ride the other. We love it. It's great.
If we were to steal your iPhone or iPod, what music would we find on it?
One thing you definitely find is, it's a new song, it's called The Middle. It's my granddaughter's favorite. And whenever she says, Papa, play The Middle. So you'd find that. And then, you know, I grew up in the 70s. So I love a lot of the 70s bands, a lot of the local ones, Boston, Aerosmith, the usual suspects.
And last question is, why are you the best candidate for the position?
I'm the best candidate for the position because I represent the type of change that we're looking for. I'm running against someone that's a career politician. I'm not a career politician. I'm a business person. And we need someone that's willing to reach across the aisle and work with folks to get the work of the people in this district done, not just the bidding of the party or that of special interests. I will not be owned by anybody. I signed a 3-term pledge to serve no more than 3 terms in the lower house of Congress, as opposed to the gentleman I'm running against, who's running for his 5th term in Congress. That comes with a lot of issues and problems. I really do believe if we had term limits, we wouldn't have a lot of the problems we had today. I'm not interested in furthering my career. I'm interested in serving the people of this district.
I want to thank you for joining us on the show today. I want to wish you the best of luck.
Thanks, Jonathan. I really appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
Absolutely. And that's all the time we have for Meet the Candidates. And until next time, make it a great day.